And good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, and I will tell you right at the top that you can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. Always glad to get mail from folks. And of course, we have the previously recorded programs and some commentary at Taylor-Report.com. And today we're going to be talking to somebody really interesting. He's been a guest on our show previous, and I'm just giving you a heads up at the moment. It'll be about a half hour. We'll be speaking with Dr. Teyajan Rudasingwa. He is the author of a book, a brand new book, called Healing a Nation, A Testimony. And further subhead to that is Waging and Winning a Peaceful Revolution to Unite and Heal a Broken Rwanda. And I know now, through the magic of the internet, all I have to say is words like Google or Amazon, and then you'll all go and find it before I can figure out where else you might go. I will tell you that you better get this book, because when we do find ourselves speaking with him, I'm going to point out that he is a very important historical witness to modern Rwanda and all the things that you associate with it. If you've seen Hotel Rwanda, which is, features the life of the adventure, misadventure, horror story of Paul Rusesabagina. It was actually, the hotel was called the Mille Collines. You will know about these stories if you followed the accounts of the experience of Canada's General Romeo Dallaire. You will know, of course, and there have been it's been a long history of this particular episode in Rwanda history, beginning with the attempt by the Rwandan Patriotic Front to seize power through an invasion of Rwanda, which began on October the 1st, 1990, culminating in the assassination of the president of Rwanda at the time, Juvenal Habyarimana, which occurred on April the 6th, 1994. And following in that, there were massive loss. There was massive loss of life among civilians, massacres. And there was a struggle that lasted about 3 months and resulted in the complete capture of power by the army under the command of a gentleman named Paul Kagame. Dr. Teyajan Rudasingwa comes into this because he was a lieutenant. I'm using the word broadly as a political lieutenant. He was also a major in the RPF, but was at the side of General Kagame and was in then represented his country in various forums. And therefore, what he has to say about what occurred and how and why and how and where we find ourselves today, because as of this juncture in the Great Lakes region of Africa, we have an episode that is just winding down, and we're not quite sure what's going to result. But the Rwandan army and Paul Kagame's forces have alleged are allegedly manipulating and trying to hold on to Eastern Congo. That would be a country that over which they have no sovereignty, but in which they have forces. And there's been a period of bloodshed in Eastern Congo while the governments of Rwanda and secondarily the government of Uganda has attempted to keep that portion of East Congo, which is quite rich in minerals, as always turns out to be the case when you're trying to understand these things, out of the control of the central government in Kinshasa, where the son of Laurent Kabila is the main leader. But now there's been the result of the fighting, and there's such a massive loss of life among civilians that actually there's been heavy UN presence, and they're operating under what's called Chapter 7 of the United Nations involvement in internal affairs of states, where they can fire upon people if need be to establish order. And they've been in, this fight has been going on, and we've had the collapse of the so-called guerrilla movement, M23, I'm going to call it a semi-collapse, but the story doesn't appear to be over. And some of the leaders have been taken out of the zone. Some of them, I believe, are in Uganda, some are in Rwanda, and one of them has found himself all the way to The Hague, charged with war crimes. These are all things that Dr. Tejin Rudasingwa can explain to us how they came to be. He traces it all to the original concept of the leadership of the RPF and what they intended to do, and what they didn't share with others. Their game plan. I'm going on and on about these matters, but this is just to tell you a very important interview, in my opinion. And he is the author of Healing a Nation, a testimony, brand new book. I want to make sure we tell everyone that there's an important meeting coming up this coming on weekend, on December 1st and 2nd. There's going to be a talk given in Toronto. At the Islamic Center, and I'll have the exact spot for you. But it's Sister Miriam Agnes is coming to Hamilton and to Toronto, and the sister is a very big player in attempt to resolve the violence in Syria. And we've commented a lot on it on this program. I notice that she's receiving some hostility in her attempt to do the right thing, that is, engage people in the peace process and to try to bring about ceasefires and to protect civilians. She isn't always recognized as anybody. What's the saying? Blessed are the peacemakers. It's also often, if you're the one who tries to stop a fight, you will end up harmed. But she has been very courageous. Just get these dates right. It's Sunday, December 1 at 7 p.m. at the Islamic Center of New York Region, 1380 Stouffville Road, Richmond Hill. And Mother Agnes is going to speak. She's speaking in Hamilton, Sunday, December the 1st, 2 p.m., December the 1st, 2 p.m., at the Centenary United Church, 24 Main Street West. That's in Hamilton, Sunday, December the 1st, 2 p.m., Centenary United Church. It's 24 Major Street West, and it is across from the Hamilton City Hall. And the organization is Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. CA, if you want, and I would recommend go to that site. Incidentally, you know, websites are so much more efficient and better than the old days of mere leaflets, because now you can go to Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca, and not only will you learn the details of Mother Agnes Miriam's background and what she has done, and she's making a tour. They will tell you where she has been, where she will be appearing next, and you will be able to learn all the details you need. That's Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca. The title of her talk is "What is Really Happening in Syria Today?" So that's December the 2nd. December the 1st. Somebody's going to be peeved with me. Sunday, December the 1st at 2 o'clock. And that evening, December the 1st at 7 p.m., she will be at the Islamic Center of York Region, 1380 Stouffville Road, Richmond Hill. And just from our vantage point, Taylor Report, I want to say that I think it's wonderful she's come to the country. I think it is a great opportunity for Canadians to see her, hear what she has to say, and also to, because I think this is important, because there's been a campaign by people to who are trying to support the terrorist forces, in my opinion, operating in Syria. They've tried to negate anyone who is calling for negotiated peace according to the Geneva arrangement. I think it's called Geneva 2, which we all want to see take place. If there's anybody who's worked hard to make that happen with prejudice toward none, pardon the pun, it is Mother Agnes Mariam. And because she has taken the stand she has and done the work that she has, there are people who didn't want her to talk here. And it reminds me of course, when, during the bombing of Libya, actually the beginning of the attacks, I should say, just staying focused on Syria, George Galloway spoke up. And as you'll remember that he always comes in for grief when he wants to come to Canada. There was always a discussion of whether or not he'd be allowed. At one point, and I actually don't remember what triggered it all, he was to come here to talk, and he was a member of the British Parliament, and he wasn't allowed in the country, and he had a whole lot of rigmarole went on before he eventually was able to attend. And it was a victory, actually, of the action of Canadian peace advocates and also people who believe in freedom of speech, et cetera, that they fought to get Galloway here. There's a kind of hostility. Those who created the hostility and attempted to block Galloway are pretty much the same ilk who don't want to hear from Mother Agnes Mariam. Now, there's a meeting. It's taking place this evening in Toronto, another one that is very, very important. This has to do with the Roma community. And I just remind you, there is a website, romatoronto.org, romatoronto.org. There's this evening at 7 p.m. at the Parkdale Activity Recreation Center. That's a 7 p.m. Parkdale Activity Recreation Center, Monday, November 25, today. The author, a Montreal author, Norman Navrocki, is talking about his new novel, Casarola, and it is it's a book launch, and there will be for this novel, and it's going to be live theater and music. And his novel covers 130 years in the life of an Italian family who resist fascism and also fight against the persecution of the Roma. And we began on this issue some time back when we, like others, we were shocked to see a story emerging from Greece, actually, of a little girl who was found in a camp of, I should say, a community of Roma outside a Greek city. And this was a typical situation where the Roma were not being given access to any public facilities at all, and they were in poverty, but it was a living, viable community of mutually supportive people, the way poor people often are. They were getting by and facing quite a bit of persecution and discrimination in Greece. There had been some sort of triggering excuse for the Greek police, but when they arrived there, they said looking for drugs or guns or something. The only thing that they could see wrong in this situation of dire poverty and lack of services, the only bad thing that they found was that there was a blonde girl. And they decided, well, if she's blonde, she must be not belong to the Roma. And so then they decided to do all the usual things, which was to allow the spread of mad rumors, which are as comment in 21st century as they were in the 16th or 15th, just pick a century, and we have not improved. Hysteria, people who have no knowledge of the matters at all begin to shout and point. So within days, in Ireland, they had a case where a classic, what we call a nosy neighbor, thought they saw a child with her whose hair was too blonde, or maybe her eyes were blue, and decided that must be another child that doesn't really belong to the Roma. And the authorities came and took the child. In that case, by the way, they found through the DNA that it was indeed the child of the family from whom they had taken it. In these matters, police are always quite inventive and able to say, well, okay, we were wrong about that, but you know, you're something, we looked at your papers, or you owe this guy a bill somewhere, and it becomes a nastiness, you know, italicized. In the case of the blonde girl in the Greek camp, of course, she wasn't kidnapped, but they, even the RCMP, I remember the paper said that they immediately took her photograph and they were searching to see if she might be, a missing child from here. So, of course, you know, after all, a poor child missing, everybody becomes concerned. And so people were allowed to think that way. Well, you know, in the end, as it came to the end of it, this happened in more than several instances of children being removed from Roma communities. And so what you actually have with, yes, you had kidnapping, you had children being taken, and it was the state doing the taking. They're the ones who were removing people's children from them. And, you know, the poor are very vulnerable because you can always make a case about the poor. They're not providing this, or they're not providing that, or the kid doesn't have the same chances as a middle-class kid. That's not news, actually. Amongst the poor, that is a widely known phenomenon. If you want to take all the poor and give them a middle-class setting, by golly, do it. We would all be delighted, but that isn't what – it just becomes a way to dislike poor people. And in many ways, the Roma story is just a story about poverty and the way people who experience poverty get special services of a kind that, you know, at the end of a nightstick or a boot. So this matter got our attention, and we talked about it. And thank heaven, there is a very active, well-organized community and leadership. And you can go to RomaToronto.org. And the tonight's meeting is at 1499 Queen Street West, Parkdale Activity Recreation Center. And there you will not only hear an author who knows where he speaks on the matter of Roma in Italy and their experience, and Italy's experience with fascism, Norman Navracchi. And, of course, there will be music and there will be live theater and the whole story. So Casrola, by the way, is the title. It's on the matter of the poor little girl. I want to just say also this, that we don't know the result. What occurred was that the blonde Roma girl was, in fact, Roma, and they did, through interviews and testing and whatnot, they located the mother. But, of course, the mother is a poor woman, and she had done what many poor people do. I've mentioned on this show, it happened to my own grandmother, so I know something about it. Actually, and my grandmother then passed on the favor to her daughter. But that is, you are working on farms and you're poor in areas of the world where there's not a lot of services and you don't have any particular rights. What happens is that the children are passed from one family to another. Usually it's relatives or distant relatives, and sometimes it's just a friend. Well, that's what occurred here. But, of course, once the state gets involved and you have a man in robes who sits up on a desk to make you realize that he's half a god, then they can take a child away from you because they don't think you've washed under her nails or something. And this becomes an exercise in middle-class respectability and the browbeating of the poor. In this case, they didn't return the child to its actual mother. What they did was, the mother was living in Bulgaria, so they took the child, as far as I know, blonde Roma has been transferred to Bulgaria, where, and my understanding is that she's in an orphanage. I believe the two adults who were raising her, amongst all of her playmates and friends in the community, I think the last I heard, they were in custody. They certainly committed a major offense. They're poor, and there's absolutely, you know, we're very unforgiving toward the poor, despite all the signs of crosses around Europe and the memories of the one who cared about the poor. The state doesn't seem to get the message. Anyway, it's a miserable story, and we intend to keep following it because they were seeing other signs, including, you know, the apex of civilization, Britain. Most of their papers are full of writing which could come out of medieval Europe, all about trying to scrutinize Roma culture and scrutinize criminal records, etc. Any community looked at closely will produce a bunch of criminal records. Look at the mayor of Toronto. You know, it doesn't mean a great deal. But I have seen headlines and reports in British papers that are just absolutely shocking at how careless and reckless the writing is. But and you can tell that the idea is to excite the imagination of somebody who's not terribly bright, but has plenty of prejudices. And there's a type of journalist who can do that. And the end might be, of course, a mob or something ugly. There is plenty of ugliness going on. And Britain has now a neo-nationalist kind of white power type of movement, which I believe has put some people in parliament. The atmosphere is changing. And it's not pretty. And then you have the Socialist Party of France. It has a member of its ruling member of its cabinet, a man with a, by the way, whose name is Emmanuel. He is actually originally from Spain. And speaking of the Roma, he said, well, the Roma are not French. They're not like us. And they shouldn't be coming here. And you say, your name again is what? Or the idea that France is one big homogenous group, that's a myth. Anybody knows the story of the modern French history knows that the trouble of the first thing that happened after the great French Revolution was that sections of France tried to break off, saying, we're not French, we're not like you, we speak different, our type of French is different, the Bretonese. There are many differences. So this playing to this fantasy of a homogeneous community, you know, that is somehow achieved a great amount and all that, it's infuriating to watch. And in East Europe and in now the Czech Republic, we're seeing parades, and in Hungary and Romania, parades of people who are, putting it mildly, fascist. And attacks on Roma are a major part of what they do. They constitute themselves as paramilitary. Just run your mind back to the 30s and see if you can picture that. And they go around looking for people who are not of their, of not Czech or not Hungarian or not Romanian in their narrow opinion. And then they see if they can make their lives miserable. A lot of them, one of the things that's going on is that they're making themselves adjuncts to the police. The police say, well, we're not going to be there in that neighborhood, but these people, these patriotic, whatever they are, they can put on their shirts and carry their flags and walk through those neighborhoods or put on a badge and be kind of semi-policemen. Well, again, look in your history books and you won't have any trouble figuring out where this is going to go. And so the Roma are, as always, one of the targets of when you have political turbulence, economic hard times, they become I hate to say it, it's kind of a bellwether as to how healthy a culture is. Incidentally, they are supremely European. All European culture, wherever you go, if you look into the music, the poetry, the novels, you will find this figure, and I will use the old-fashioned word, the gypsy figure. That's in British literature, French literature, wherever you look, because they've been there, been part of Europe, an exotic part of Europe, but part of Europe, for 1,500 years. Those people who believe they shouldn't be there, I don't know, who would they be? The Visigoths? The Vandals? I'm not sure who these, anybody would say such a thing, where they come from. But I can say that the word barbaric would apply to those who are attempting to do this. I'm very glad that the United Nations and various human rights groups are all on record as for the right thing, but they're usually rather tepid, and they always, you know, issue 40-page reports after all the blood has been shed and somebody's lost their child, and then they hope for better times. So let us not count on that form of intervention, but rather speak out in defense of the rights of everyone, and that includes Roma. And they have the right to become refugees. If someone's going to come into their neighborhood and bother them and prevent them from getting jobs and prevent them from going to school, then they must, if they want to survive, they would be wise to leave. And a country like Canada should be have their arms open to such people. It's merely a test of our common humanity, which shouldn't be that difficult. I would think we could accomplish that. So again, I'm going to just announce this meeting. It's going to be 7 o'clock tonight, Parkdale Activity Recreation Center, 1499 Queen Street West. Go to the site romatoronto.org to just keep track of these issues. The author of Casarola, he is from Montreal. His name is Norman Navrocki, is going to be there. He'll be, of course, talking about his book, but there's also going to be music, and there's going to be some theater, so you're in for a treat. And the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War is going to have on December, this is, one must keep their notes in front of them, as December the 1st at 2 p.m., Centenary United Church, Hamilton, Sunday, December the 1st, 2 p.m., Centenary United Church, 24 Main Street West, across from City Hall. And it's the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca. We're going to take a break. We will come back, and we will talk to Dr. Teja Jen Rudasingwa.